as this is a Chazara Shir, we're not going to see everything that we saw the first time around with this, because the first time around this was a three-hour program, and it's 1 hour or 59 minutes today. Our topic is Mavir al Das Balabayas, or Mavir al Das Shel Balabayas, to be precise, based on the Gemara of Mitzia and Chesem et Aleph Talmud Beis. I gave you the link at the top. That's where YU Torah collects my Bav Mitzia Parak Bav Shiurim. So if anyone wants to go back and hear 3 hours worth, you can click on that link, and it'll give you all of those Shiurim. What we want to discuss is this. What power does an owner have to limit the use of his items by a borrower, by someone who is renting them, by somebody who receives them as a gift? So what we're going to see, I made this point when we saw this the first time, is actually a remarkable thing in the sense that the Gemara is going to have a discussion in which the Chachamim are going to say, yeah, you really don't have power. Rabbi Meir is going to say, no, deviating from what the owner wanted is actually theft. We're going to paskin against Rabbi Meir. We're going to say, well, Rabbi Meir isn't really as limiting as he sounds anyway. And yet, even though Rabbi Meir isn't that serious, and even though we don't paskin like him, nonetheless, we're basically going to adopt Rabbi Meir's philosophy in a variety of ways. You follow? So this is the restoration of Rabbi Meir. That's the way that you could describe this. So if you take a look at Source Aleph, our core Gemara, we're going to see the rest of it a little bit later, but the basic piece of it. The Mishnah says, you rented a donkey to take it on a mountain, and instead you took it in the fields, or vice versa. Even if the journeys are the same length, umesa, and it dies, chayav, you're liable. You veered from what you were supposed to do. Next line in the Mishnah, though, says, Hasachar is a chamor l'alicha bahar v'alicha b'bika. You hired a donkey to take it on a mountain, and instead you took it in a field. No apparent difference from the first line in the Mishnah, except that the gender switched, right? Holicha instead of holicho. Im echlika patur v'imhu... I mean, that doesn't matter to the donkey. Im echlika patur v'imhuch machayev. So we'd say, well, it depends what went wrong. Did it slip? Did it overheat? Is it because of the conditions? Is it despite the conditions? And this is bizarre. As the Gemara notes, that means you have a Mishnah which is contradicting itself. The first line in the Mishnah simply said, you didn't do what you were expected to do, right? Therefore, you're liable for the harm to the donkey. The second line says, well, wait, let's discuss. Why did this happen? What made it happen? So the Gemara asks, Maishna Reisha de lo kamaflig, Maishna Seva de kamaflig. Why is it that in the Reisha it simply said you're chayav? There was no distinction drawn between different circumstances, whereas in the Seva we make distinctions. So Amr Rabbi Yochanan Hamani, Rabbi Meir he. Rabbi Yochanan says the answer is the Reisha is actually Rabbi Meir. Da Amr Kalamavir al Dasha Balabayas, Nikra Gazlan. If you veer from, if you deviate from what the Balabayas said, that makes you a thief. Simple read of his presentation of Rabbi Meir. And then the Gemara goes on to try to show how you know this is Rabbi Meir's position, and we'll kind of come back to that, God willing, when we talk about gifts towards the end of the Shir. But that's the basic machlokas then. In other words, the first line in the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir speaking, and the second line in the Mishnah is everybody else, a.k.a. Chachamim. The Rif in source base quotes you this, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hamani Rabbi Meir Yidomar Kalmavir Al Das Balabayas Nikwa Gazlan. He says that's Rabbi Meir's position, and he quotes you a case that the Gemara is going to bring to show you that this is indeed Rabbi Meir's position, the case in which you give somebody tzedakah and say, this is for you to buy a particular kind of clothing. He may not use it to buy a different kind of clothing. That's Mavir al Das Balabayas. And then the Rif concludes, V'lesa l'd Rabbi Meir. We don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. Ditto the Rush, and again, I shortened the source sheet from what we saw originally in our discussion. We're not going to go through all the sources, but that's the Rush's position, the Magid Mishnah's position, the Beis Yosef's position, Chashem Mishpat Shin Tes. The Rambam is in Hilchos Chirus, Perek Dalav Alacha Aleph. The Rambam omits the Reisha altogether. He simply only brings you the Seifa. That shows he doesn't follow the position of Rabbi Meir. So the question is, again, as I said, we are going to rehabilitate Rabbi Meir. even though Rabbi Meir has been kicked out by the Rif and the Rosh and the Rambam and so on, nonetheless, we are going to rehabilitate Rabbi Meir, even as we are going to limit somewhat the position of Rabbi Meir and the position of the Chachamim, as we'll see. So I gave you this outline of key ideas that emerge in the course of our discussion. I'm not going to go through the list right now, because the whole point is these are going to emerge in the course of our discussion. But the point is just to have a little summary of what it is that we're supposed to be picking up here. That's the idea. I also gave you a table of cases, which actually we'll go through briefly because it provides a decent outline. So these are the different ways one could deviate from owner intent and what ends up happening. This doesn't cover everything in the shiur. We're talking about more than just this, but this I think is important to see. So mild deviation is the machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says you're not allowed to. And we're going to see why. Either it's because the owner reserves certain rights and says, I'm only allowing you to do certain things and I'm not allowing you to do other things. Or it's actually a condition of the rental of the item, a loan of the item. We'll talk about the difference between those two things shortly. But Rabbi Meir does not actually call it theft, as we're going to see in a moment. The Chachamim say, Mutter b'di'evet. That was the point. L'chatchila, everybody agrees. You said you were going to do something, you do it. B'di'evet, though, it's mutter.
What happens with the evidence according to Rabbi Meir?
According to Rabbi Meir, if you actually did it, you will be chayav. That was the first line in our Mishnah.
But he's saying it's not theft. That's what you put over here.
Right, but it's not theft. Okay.
No, it's not called theft. You're not called a goslin. You're chayav like a goslin. In the first time, when I gave the shir originally, I showed you that there was a Rashi who actually seems to say this. Rashi says, chayav be'onsin ke goslin. Okay. And they darshan from that, he's not actually a goslin. We're not calling him a Rasha, disqualifying from Edus and all of that, but he has certain ramifications to his deeds, which are the ramifications of theft.
I think there's just one more quick point. I think there are cases where the Chacham seem like they say it's okay.
Right? Okay, l'chatchila?
Yeah, like where you can buy a...
So we're not on the Tzedaka case. The Tzedaka case really ends up being its own deal.
Okay.
Abnormal ill use, right? The word ill, when you write in the font that I do here, is a little bit hard to read. The abnormal three use, yes. But the idea here is you use the item in a way that is completely inappropriate, that everybody would look at and say, what in the world did you think you were doing? You shot the donkey into space. You did something that nobody would ever allow. So that's awesome. You're not allowed to do that. Everybody agrees with that. And either you're going to pay rent or you're going to pay depreciation. Meaning, either you pay like a user of the item, or you pay like a thief.
Whichever's great.
Well, that's going to be the choice, but not necessarily. We'll see that. We're going to come back to that. What about the intermediate case, where what you did was not obviously wrong, but on the other hand, it's not a mild deviation either, so what we're going to end up seeing is that the same rules are going to apply as in the case of abnormal ill use. You're not allowed to do that deviation. Subletting is its own category. I rent it from somebody, and then I rent it to somebody else, and we'll see three different views of what the result of that is. Do we say that the sublet, even if you're not supposed to do it, is effective? Do we say that the sublet is effective until the original owner says, that's no good, you're not allowed to do that? Or do we say, no, the sublet is actually invalid, right? The case that we gave from the Rush, the ring, that you borrowed the ring and you used it for Kiddushin without informing the original owner and getting his permission to do so. We're going to come back to this case. I'm just giving the overview. And then last is the misused donations piece, where Rabbi Meir says you're not allowed to do it. The Chachamim indeed say entirely mutter unless there's a special kapeda, which we've talked about and we will continue to talk about. And the Ashkenazim who say that the donor is actually allowed to walk away and to say, I promised I was going to give you something, but now I'm not going to. We talked about the fundraising for a woman's dowry. We talked about the Yon Shavuyim, where it's going to be used for something else. The Ashkenazim say you're not bound to that gift, where the Sfardim seem to give more leeway, although the Chasam Sofer says they don't. And again, well, God willing, come back to that. That's the basic set of possible cases. Let's go through this one by one. Rabbi Meir's case in the Mishnah is the most mild. You deviate from the prescribed use in a relatively minor deviation. So we noted that there are two different ways to read this deviation. If you take a look at Source Gimel on your sheet, Mizalman Nechemia Goldberg, I really like his formulation, especially because I saw it many years ago, and therefore it's Gears of the Ankusa, so I actually remember what he said. He was dealing with the issue of copying cassettes, back when there were such a thing. He says, the case that we use as our basis for Bimeir is indeed the Tzedakah case. You give money to the pauper and say, go buy this particular type of clothing. It's as though you gave it to him with a reservation of rights. I'm only giving you the right to use this in order to buy such and such. But to buy something else, you didn't give him that right. It actually, that right belongs to the balabayas. The nimsa sha'ani goes to the balabayas as a dinner im kona davaracher. If you buy something else, that's actually theft. Don't think that what's going on here is that it's a condition. I am giving you this dinar on condition that you don't buy anything else. And if you do, such that the original presentation of the coin turns out to have been illegal. He was taking it from me. And therefore, it's theft. And therefore, it is reversed. It actually goes back to the original, the donor of the money. That's where Zalman Nechemia reads. He says, not the second way. Not it's an almanas. Not that it's a t'nai that's going to invalidate the original gift. He says, I'm not reading it that way. I'm reading it as, you gave him the rights to do certain things with this. Nafkamina between them is, what if he does the wrong thing with it? Do we actually say the money is owned now by the original donor? Rav Zalman Nechemia says no. However, if you flip the page to Source Dalet, Rav Naftali Bar Yilan says, you bet.
If you do the wrong thing, then what does happen?
So according to Rav Zalman Nechemia, so what you did was wrong. You are called Goslin again. What Goslin means, we're going to come back to and moderate that and say he's not really a Goslin. He has no... no fallout, according to the Chachamim from, within Rabbi Meir. We're within the position of Rabbi Meir, so it doesn't make a difference. Rabbi Meir will say you will have to pay for it. But it's not reversed. Okay. So you compensate him for it. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. So Rav Naftali Bar Yilan in Dalet says, he says, instead of saying that there's some kind of concept of shiur, that you're withholding certain rights, that you're reserving certain rights, he says, that's nonsense. If you look at the first part that I bolded in Dalet, that's a chidush ha-menugad leklal she'adam eino meshayir b'yado davar she'en bo mamash. He says, there's no such thing. This is the idea that you reserve rights. They're abstract. How do you reserve something that's intangible? You gave him this, it's his. You didn't give him this, it's not his. You can't give it to him saying, here, this is yours for the sake of use in certain ways and not for the sake of other ways as a reservation of rights. He doesn't believe in such a thing. If you gave him the physical item, you gave it to him. So what is this? Instead, it's a Tanai. It's Tanai, as he says at the end of the line. I should have bolded that as well. Adif lefareisha lefaneinu Tanai kechol Tanai ba'alma. He says, we do this with conditions all the time. We make conditions in deals. So why can't this be a condition? And then he goes on to say, yeah, I know. He never actually stated it as a condition. Forget Tanai b'nei gad b'nei re'uven, which they discuss also, right? You didn't double it. If you do this, then X. If you don't do this, then Y. But he says that doesn't make a difference. Why? Because he says that declaration that you make of use this to do X is a gilui das. It reveals what you were thinking, and that's good enough. That's the position of Rav Naftali Bar Yilan. As we said the first time in this, most adopt the model of Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, that this is not a tnai, that this is actually shiur b'kinyano of some kind. Granted, again, we don't pass them like Rabbi Meir, but it does end up having ramifications according to the Chachamim, because again, l'chatchila, they don't want you breaking this. So if nothing else, it has ramifications there. Rav Alex, you were going to say? No? Okay.
I guess one point I would make specifically is I feel like it makes more sense to retain some remayer according to that perspective. I mean, you really think it's a Tanai, then it should result in Avery Gosling.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like sort of, either it's a Tanai or it's not. If you retain the Shear idea,
yeah,
you could say, like, maybe I didn't actually retain your rights, but I could say that, like, I... You
know, it makes I more sense to
I
say he's not
I don't want to choose it that way. It's inappropriate to do it.
But right.
I think that's...
I hear you. I mean, ultimately, I'm going to come down to Shear Cicerelli Asu Avila, which will apply in both models.
That's fair.
The, just moderating Rabbi Meir's position to say, even Rabbi Meir doesn't believe that you're actually a thief. I brought you in source, hey, this article by Rabbi Yehud Schwartz on Bava Metzia Ayin Ches, in which he says, hey, if Rabbi Meir is serious, there's no such thing as commerce anymore. Right? Because anything your agent is going to do on your behalf has to be filled out on a paper and signed. Otherwise, I didn't give you the right to do that. So he says, Misvarat Varavnirim Beruim, ... He goes on to say, first in the part that's not bolded in hay, he says, you could say logically that it's very clear, right? That the position of Rabbi Meir is very straightforward. He only said use it this way, and that's it. But in the bold, Da'aka, Shagdara Noksha Kazu, Asuyla Hakshos Me'oda, Kium Olam Kalkalitakin. He says, the only problem that you run into is that you can't have proper commerce anymore. Shaliach Zakuk L'chovesh Pe'ulam Mesuyam B'nyanei HaShlichut. He says, a Shaliach has to have some kind of freedom of enterprise here, freedom of activity. You can't tell me that the shaliach has to report back and ask questions before everything he's going to do. Not done.
Doesn't this like just work well with the Nathalie Barilan in terms of like there's certain things which are very clear he should not switch, and that's like a gilui da'at. Anything else that's not clear is like.
Right, he certainly gives you, and Nathalie Barilan's formulation gives you a lot more freedom to simply match this up with standard reality. And say, when we read umgunas in general, when we read people's minds, we don't just do it in terms of the things they say, but in terms of the context in which they operate. So yes, I think you're right, that if you would attain with Bar Ilan, that would help diffuse this concern. I think that's true. He points you to the Ma'aril, which I brought you in Vav, who makes the statement of Shoshami Das Digra Gazlan Mavra Das Balabayas. He says, Kimiduma Lisha Pirshu Rabosenu Din Gazlan Yeshlo Volodika Over Below Signov, as I was saying to you before. He has the status of a Gazlan in the sense that he has to pay it back, but not that he's actually a Gazlan. He's not really a thief. As I said, the first time we did this, we saw Rashi also, who had language that was supported, that was read to support this. So on the one hand, we bring Rabbi Meir towards the center a little bit by saying he doesn't really mean you're a thief. On the other hand, we also bring the Chachamim towards Rabbi Meir by saying that the Chachamim believe that that lechatchila, you're not supposed to veer from what the Balabayis intended. In Sur Zayin, I brought you Zaman Chamir Goldberg, the part that I bolded. Masha Aser lechatchila nira mikan sha aser lavar al das Balabayis gam b'shalo shir shir mimenu b'chepetz. He says, even without believing in shir, in reservation of rights, nonetheless, lechatchila, you can't violate it, and I brought you the Pesach Hoshin as well, in Ches le'inyan lechatchila. As far as lechatchila is concerned, you do have to honor it, and I think that this is, as I just said before, because of the Pasuk in Tzefanya, She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla, that you're not allowed to be dishonest. That's not what you're just supposed to do. I don't care if you can get away with it in court, that's not really what matters. So, that's all in terms of mild deviation. The opposite end of the spectrum, as I called it on the sheet, Kotev Beis, the other pole. When you're talking about deviating it in a way that is obviously harmful to the property. The Tosefta we saw last time above Metzia Parakhes listed all sorts of uses that you're not allowed to do, and you see it brought in the Shulchan Aruch, which I brought you here in Source Tes, where the Shulchan Aruch writes in Chosha Mishpat Shin Ches, Sachar Chamor Stam, you hired a donkey without specifying what you're going to do with it. So what do you use it for? Whatever is considered a normal burden in that land. If you go 1/30th above that, in case you couldn't do math, right? We had a nice discussion the first time as to why you needed to give me this example. The if indeed you cause harm, then you're going to be liable. We have to come back to that and ask, is that specifically because the damage stemmed from your overweight burden, right? What if the damage came from something else? We're going to talk about that. But small veering doesn't do it. The cap is here is 1/30th. And why not? Rav Yitzchak Zalman Meltzer in Source Yud and Eben Azel says, as I bolded, depachos mishir zeh ein zu hosafa. Less than 1/30th is not called deviating from it. That doesn't mean that we're saying that you're allowed to deviate to a minimal extent. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is there's such a thing that's not called deviation. This is part of his words. In other words, if I rent out a donkey to you to use, and everybody knows locally that donkeys carry up to, I'm going to make up a number, everybody knows locally that donkeys carry up to 100 kilo. So that number, 100 kilo, is not measured on a scale to determine that it's 100.0000. Everybody knows that, you know, unless you're in the airport and they want to charge you for baggage, there's a degree of leeway that's still called 100 kilo, right? Whether that's 100.1 or 100.2, they're telling you 1/30th. That's the definition. But that's what this is Amon Melch's point. And the logic involved in your liability here is, and the question of what you pay and how you pay is what we're now going to see as part of a discussion of the intermediate case. We've seen the mild case where the Chachamim say, Lachatchila, you should still honor what your agreement was, but b'di'evad, you're not liable. Rabbi Meir disagrees. We've seen the case in which everybody is going to hold that you're liable, which is where you deviated from the expectations in a way that is clearly not supposed to be done and harmful. What about the intermediate case where it's not in accordance with the agreement, but it's not obviously dangerous? You're not mild and you're not vicious. So what do we do with this? So here we said that it is also under the category of shlichus yad. You are using the item that is in your care, and you cause harm. Now, you're not liable for shlichus yad unless you actually cause harm. In other words, forget our discussion altogether. Daniel gave me an item to guard, and I decided to go outside. It was a sweatshirt. So I walked outside wearing the sweatshirt. I came back. No damage to the sweatshirt whatsoever. Looks just the same. Smells just the same. No issues. No problems. Whatever. I have no liability. Maybe I wasn't supposed to do it, but you can't demand anything of me. You're only liable for shlichus yad in any meaningful way if there is harm. However, what we're going to see, I've already alluded to this, is what if there is harm, but it's not because of what I did? The harm happened anyway. So how are we going to look at that? So we're going to come back to that. Two views of why your shlichus yad is illegal. Why you're not allowed to use the item in a way that deviates from the agreement. Simple view is, you weren't granted the right to handle the property like an owner. Go back to Rav Zalman Nechemia's model of Shir Bikinyano. Right? You weren't given the right to use it in this way, and that's what seems to be the position of the stipler, the Kilas Yaakov, in source Yud Aleph. He quotes you the Rambam, I bolded it, Makna Adam Aguf Leperosav. One can assign ownership of a field for the sake of its produce. In other words, to say to you, I'm not selling you my field, I'm selling you the produce, which hasn't grown yet. However, sale, gift, whatever it is, that's not called Dabar Shalom Bala Olam, even though there is no produce, because the body of the field exists. And then he says, the second bolded line, L'socher Bayis Osad Al-Chavero. It's like when you rent out a house or a field to somebody. Shalom Hignalo Haguf. You didn't actually give him the house. He doesn't own the house. He doesn't own the field. Ela Hanas Haguf. It's just the benefit that comes from it. That's the position of the Rambam. So the Kilas Yaakov quotes that as far as our discussion. And he says, notice that the Rambam equated selling an item's product, right? Selling the fruit that's going to come from the field with renting a field with renting a house. And then he quotes you another line from the Rambam, where he says, Hakone Sada, the part I bolded, Hakone Sada Leperoseha, in the event that you buy the produce that a field is going to produce, hasn't yet, we say, Yeshlo Lenota Olazara, Kozman Sheyirtse Olahovira, so it's your choice what you're going to do with it. You could choose to plant it, and that way you'll have something. You can choose to leave it fallow. It's your business. That's the case where you buy the product of the field. So if there's no product, it's your problem. You paid him. Money's gone. It's your choice whether you're going to get anything out of it. However, hasocher eino kein. He says this is a distinction. When you rent it, it's not true. Rental only gives you certain rights. Buying the field's produce gives you more rights. That's the position of the Rambam. Why is that? Asked Achilles Yaakov. Why is it that if I buy the future produce of the field, it's my choice whether to generate produce, work the field or not. When I rent the field, though, I have an obligation that I actually have to work it. What's the distinction? So he says, Yesh lefarish, the bottom paragraph in Yud-Aleph, the difference between rental and doing this purchase of the produce, Einu mishum shem chalukim b'iker kinyasam. It's not that the kinyan is different. Ela mishum shalashon schirus mashma alfanim elu v'haviki hisna sha'al ofen ze hiskir. He says, schirus sounds like exactly this. That I have a responsibility to work it, that's just inherent in schirus, as though I had made a condition that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to work it. It's going to produce. Mashegin lashon mechira leperos, as opposed to the language of selling for produce or buying, really, the future produce. When it comes to rental, you only have certain rights. It's different from buying the produce. Effectively, when you buy the produce, you're like an owner for all produce-related acts. When you're a renter, you're not really an owner. And that's the key part that I wanted to pull from this Kilas Yaakov. Renting it doesn't make you an owner, and you have only limited freedom. And so Rav Zalman Nechemia invokes this idea to explain Rabbi Meir earlier. Yes?
You're not saying the opposite? You're saying it's not a difference between buying and renting, but rather the assumption is that when you're buying, they're buying payroll, so there'll be more rights. And the assumption is that when you're renting, there will be certain less rights.
Yeah.
But that's essentially the same thing.
Yes, I mean, okay. I don't know if it's, yeah, I understood that was what I was trying to say.
Okay.
So, yes. Yeah. If I understood myself correctly, then we agree.
Okay.
That's the first take. The second take, this I got out of that article I referenced for you the first time in the Chokli Yisrael, in Schir Sheila Tezayin. The other way to look at it is, the owner is still entirely in charge of the item. And there's a rule. This sounds philosophical rather than Chosh and Mishpat. This sounds like the sort of thing that you would see sort of in like Rav Shimshon Ufal Hirsch after the fact explanation of a halacha in the Torah. But what he says is that you're not allowed to use somebody's property against him. By definition. If this is Natanel's, you can't use it in a way that's going to harm Natanel. Where does this come from? So look at the Ramah in Source Yud Beis. Misha nosin la'acher dira v'beiso v'ena makabal tzarech lo'osa dira. Okay? You gave somebody the right to live in your house. He doesn't need it. He has a house. Nearly the yuchal haskiro. So he could rent it out. Olamochal la'acher shebde beiso en ruba mimenu. He could sell it to somebody as long as that other person's household is not larger than this person's household. Right? We talked about that. Delo, I'm not going to go into that in this year. Delo gara kalach hamakabal matana mikalach hamashayir la'atzmo. Because the power of somebody who receives it as a gift is no less than the power of the owner who retains rights for himself. Dinosein v'ayin yafa nosein. The assumption is that when he gives it with a generous eye. In other words, the rights of an owner all go to the person who was given or rented the property for use. The property for use. That's the position of the Ramah. Says the Nesivos, commenting on that in Source Yud Gimel. Yesh chiluk ben socher ledavar shehu shelo. There's a difference between a renter and somebody who actually, and I'm using renter as in the person who pays the money and gets use. I'm not going into the renter-rentee thing. Sorry. There's a difference between a renter and an owner. The chazinan de davka b'shnayim shesachru masik de'in echad yochal lahoshiv acher b'mekomo. He says, when two people rent a property together, and one of them says, well, I would like to actually allow somebody else to live in my half, in my space, then we say, you're not allowed to do that. Mashma d'shnayin shut from lagamri. It sounds like if they're actually owners, they bought it together. I own my half, you own your half. I would be allowed to let somebody use the part that is mine. What's the difference? Vatam nirali, and this is the key. D'bishalo, when it's yours, yachokol adam lasas mashiyirtze. You can do what you want. Even if the other guy's not going to be happy about it, you're not actively harming him. You're good. So if David and Mickey decide that they want to go into business together, and they both buy a condominium, and Mickey gets this room, and David gets that room, David can say, you know what? I'm gonna let Natan live in my room. I'm not using it right now. I'll let him use it. And Mickey has no option to complain. However, I will be socher. But if they're renting it, ein socher rasha lahaskirim lo she'ein bo shum davar hamazik. Not allowed to do that unless nothing will harm. Why? Dibishel chavero. Now, I cheated by giving the rental case as parallel to the buying case. It's where he's renting it from you, Mickey. So that's why. And that's why the line in the Nesivos is relevant. He says, if David is renting the product from, or the condominium from Mickey, he can't use it in a way that's going to harm Mickey. You can't use somebody's property in a way that is going to harm the owner. That's the principle articulated by the Nesivos. The Chochmei Yisrael believes that this can be used to explain a whole variety of things. But it's really interesting as a concept, because Nafkamina that we're going to look at now, we brought multiple Nafkaminas in the original shiur, but the one that I would want to look at now is the question of, what about use of the item isn't bad for the item, but it's bad for the owner in some way? Right? So our first explanation of why you're not allowed to do this is Shir Bikinyano, he didn't give you these, you know, the rights to use it in a way that's going to harm the item. According to Kilas Yaakov, though, you could say this use of the item is fine. Right? It's not harmful to the item. The case that we gave was I rented out a storefront with an understanding that I was going to use the storefront to sell watches, to sell jewelry or whatever it is, and I decide I want to use it instead to sell produce. Happens to be the person who rented the storefront to me is in the business of selling produce. So now I'm competing with him. So will the Nesivos argue, you're not allowed to do that? Now the truth of the matter is, if you want, you could just resolve all of this by saying, the Kilas Yaakov will believe that the owner of this storefront is Mishayer Bikinyano, the ability to use this as a storefront to sell produce. You could say that he didn't rent it out for that purpose. You could get around that. But I thought that was a really interesting possibility. Nonetheless, since this is Shlichus Yad, once there is a claim of damages, the rent claim disappears. And this goes back to the question of how exactly liability works when you misuse the item. If there is no claim of damages, you just pay rent. You're still renting it, so the answer is you pay rent and that's all there is to it. But if there is a claim of damages, then things change. And here we get to source Yudalad. Gemara in Bava Kamma. Itamar. Hatokev Svinasa Shachaber Vasva Malacha. You took control of somebody's boat and you used it. There was no license to use it. You just did it. So Amar Rav Ratz Schara Notel Ratz Chasa Notel. Rav says it's the payment depends on the owner of the boat. Either he can say pay me rent, or he can say pay me depreciation. Right, as David said, whichever one's greater is the one he's going to demand. Human nature. Ushmuel Amar Eino Notel Alav Chasa. Shmuel says no, only depreciation, no rent. Amar Rav Papa Lo Pligi. Rav Papa says there is no difference here. Ha, meaning Rav. David la Agra. Rav is talking about where it's something that is normally rented out. Ha, Shmuel, de lo avida la Agra. It's not normally rented out. Therefore, there's no charge of rent, right? The whole discussion about Zenenev is a lochaser. It's not something that's up for rent. It's simply stolen goods. That's all it is. Alternatively, I'll tell you, both of them are talking about where it is something that people do rent out. Ha, the case of Rav, dinachas le adaita de agra, is where he actually started out as a renter. He didn't just go into the marina and grab the boat. He paid rent, or he came up, he signed a rental agreement. So Rav says, in that case, the owner could say, this is in fact a rental. Or he could say, no, this is theft, it's going to be his choice. Whereas Shmuel says, I agree with Rav. I was talking about a different case. I was talking about where you went and stole it. You didn't enter it as a rental. So you went and stole it? So obviously you paid depreciation. That may be less than rent would have been. Okay, but you weren't a renter. What do you want? The owner comes back and says, I'd like to take rent instead, but I wasn't a tenant. That was never the agreement. There was no agreement. I'm just a thief, that's all. So the Rambam presents you with this dichotomy in Source Tesvav, in Hilchos Gezeila Ba'aveda. He says, talking about the case of taking the boat, the part I bolded, Vimi Asuya Lasachar, if it is indeed something that is up for rent, Im Yarad Lavatara Schirus, if he entered it as a renter, Hol Yarad Shalom Bershus, since he did not have permission, Im Ratzaba Lito Schara Notel, Ratza Lito Pchaza Notel, the owner can take whatever he wants, either rent or depreciation, Vim Yarad Lavatara Gezel, knows in a Pchaz, whereas if he went in as a thief, then he can take the depreciation specifically. So he paskins like that Ibayis Ema in Sois Yadalid. Are we clear? Am I going too fast? I mean, for those who were here the first time, this is straightforward, but for like everybody else. Hopefully the table in the beginning is also helpful. Sorry? You're good.
I'm not saying anything, I don't know.
Yeah.
No response.
Okay. No. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, except the Shulchan Aruch is in Shin Samach Gimel, Shin Samach Gimel Hey. The Ritva does this as well. If you take a look at Source Tez Zion, he quotes the Ra'ah to make the comparison, the person is working, who's using the donkey against the will of the owner, to the case of the case of taking the boat. If you look at the third line in Tezayin, Yesh me rabosenu, right? We assume is the Ra'ah. The Sha'omim delo dami letokef jemishtamish lo ladas klal. He says, he first quotes, sorry, now remember, the other way around. The opening line in the Ritva, going too fast for myself, the opening line in the Ritva is the Ra'ah. He says, v'hadik sani umesa chayiv, when it says that if the donkey dies, then the renter who used it in this way that was not licensed is liable. Kiresh Mari, that's the Ra'ah, Chayev Ba'onsei Upater Mischara. That means you pay damages and you don't pay rent. Dekev and Deshina Bidok Tzitzaso Uschiruso, because once you veered from, you deviated from what the understanding was, at that point, the agreement is gone and you're simply a thief. That was the position of the Ra'ah. V'havalek, Ketukiv Sanasul Chavera, like the case with the boat. So he says, that's the way that the Ra'ah looks at it. Now, the truth of the matter is, that the way he words it is, Pirish Mari Chay Ba'on Seyu Pater Mischara, he sort of makes it sound like there's only one option. Right? You're paying for damages. You're not paying rents. But that's clearly not what we say in the case of Toki Svinasa Shachavero, which he says he's comparing it to. So I have to believe that that's not what he means. What he means is, it's an either-or case. That's the way he reads the Rav. But then he quotes Yeshme Rabo Seinu in Tezayin, Shomer Delo Dami LeTokev. They say, no, it's not like the Tokev. Shemishtamish Lo Ladas Klal, where the guy just takes it as a thief, basically. Aval Zeh Sheyarad L'Schirus, Ubetaras Schirus Nishtamish Ba Kodem Shenensa. But this person who entered it as a tenant, and that was how he used it before, he used it illegally. Ve'en chiv onsin al sha'ah, until the damage, obviously. Ve'en chiv onsin al sha'as meshicha, el al sha'as ha'ones, chayev hu bischaro. So he says, the liability for onsin didn't start when he was a tenant, when he was renting it. Right? When you were renting it, for a period of 6 months, you used the boat normally. Okay? You had an agreement that said, only take it into the Atlantic Ocean. After 6 months, you took the boat, and you drove it through the Panama Canal, and you went through to the Pacific. Right? So at that point, you've now broken the agreement. At that point, you became a thief. So you pay rent for the 6 months until you became a thief. And then after that, it converts over to theft, and now there's the possibility of charging for damages instead. That's the Yeshem Rabbeinu argument. I think it botched the Raha a little bit, but I think the Yeshem Rabbeinu is correct, which is really the key for us, because the Pesach Choshen says that's exactly the point that we've been trying to express. What the Yeshem Rabbeinu point is trying to say is that it's an either or. Either you are a renter or you are a thief. You cannot be expected to pay both. For a period of time, you pay rent. After that, you pay depreciation. That's the way that it works. Now, since this is Shlichus Yad, I come back to one point that I hinted to earlier. You can be liable for damage, according to the Rambam, even if it's not a result of the unapproved use. Ramban says no. Ramban's position, I didn't bring it on the sheet, in Bava Metzia Peyamad Aleph HaSocher, says that your liability for harm only comes from harm that comes about from the forbidden use. Which he explains based on the Gemara, because the Gemara has this whole discussion about what if you added volume instead of adding weight, and he says the whole discussion there seems to indicate that the owner of the donkey has to be able to prove that the harm to the donkey came from the forbidden use. That was the Ramban's position. However, look at the Rambam in Sura Yudayin. You hired it to carry a certain known burden. And then you added, if you added 1/30 to the agreement, and it died, to whatever was agreed on, and it died, chayav. That's the Rambam's language. He just says chayav. Says the Magid Mishnah in Yudches, Hanira b'divei Rabbeinu she'af al pi she'derech ha'behema laseis yoser mimashi itino zeh. He says the Rambam seems to think that even though this animal normally carries more than what you gave it, came and Joseph chelak mishloshim al mishkal she'schara chayav, since you added this 1/30, you went above and beyond, doesn't matter that this animal can take it. You are liable anyway. The harm does not need to be tied to the prohibited use of the animal. The deviation doesn't matter. That's the position of the Rambam. According to the Beis Yosef, the Rosh in the Tshuva, in Tzadi Beis Beis, agrees with the Rambam, and therefore the Beis Yosef Paskins like him as well. Why is that? Why should the Rambam be right? When you say, I rented you an item, okay? Who have I not picked on yet? I don't know. If I rented you an item and said to you, I didn't pick on Ari yet. Okay.
Jay. He's over there.
He is over there. No, it's my mistake. That's all.
Your glasses are off, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. For sure, that's what it is. In the event that I rent Jay an item, right, and Jay misuses it, so if that misuse didn't lead to the harm, why should he be chayav? What's the svara? Chilasa b'pshia v'sofa ba'ones. Maybe.
Good theory.
Maybe.
Misuses of pshia.
Sorry?
Misuse
well, is worse than Shia.
No, but like you didn't actually do anything negligent. You just did something he didn't want.
No, but I did, because I went beyond the 1/30th. That's the norm.
Oh, okay.
You broke the suit, so you like the penalty?
Yeah, so...
You made there.
That's what you made.
We don't want that theory.
So the Eben HaEzel asks this question and offers the following answer. It's in Source Yates on the sheet, but looking at the time, I'm going to do it outside of the text. You can see it there in the part that I bolded. He says that the liability that the Rambam is assigning here is because you used it in an unprescribed way. The liability the Rambam is giving here. Sorry, I do need to see it inside because I'm remembering it wrong. He says in Yutes, Achin Shitas Ramam Kashi, Mashakasa Balacha Aleph. Hasokhar is Achamar Licha Baharalicha Babika, Imuchlika Potter. His question is not only the why question. His question is, the Ramam himself said, you hire a donkey to take it on a mountain and say you take it in a field. Right? So if it slipped, then you're Potter. Right? Even though you broke the rules. If it overheated, you're Chayiv. In other words, it is tied to what the wrong use was. The Chazinan on the second line, the Rambam is saying that it does have to emerge from the Shinoi, from what you did differently. So he says, I don't understand why it is that in Halacha Aleph, he said the damage has to come from your misuse, but in Halacha Vav, the Rambam is saying that any harm is going to lead to liability. So he says, V'nir b'shitas HaRambam, in the part that I bolded, he said it's a function of shlichus yad that will cause you to be liable for any harm, and I think he is really associating that with theft. I'm jumping to the other part I bolded. With the fact that we say the threshold is 1/30th, isn't because we say that when you add that caused the death. But less than that, as we said before, is not called adding. That's considered part of the normal use. And the Baal Bais is not makbid, etc. In other words, it's not called shlichus yad yet. Once it is shlichus yad, now you've reached the point where you're going to be chayav, no matter how the harm took place. Whereas the other halacha was where you walked the animal in the wrong area. That's mavir al das balabayis, not necessarily shlichus yad. The two are not the same. The mavir al das balabayis, you didn't do what the owner wanted you to do. You're only liable if the diversion actually caused the death. That's the difference that the Ibn Ezel sees. Okay. Big question.
Shlichus yad is using it for...
Shlichus yad is if you use it in a way that's actually harmful.
Okay, I suppose the Marvel that's all biased.
Where you just veered from the agreement. Yeah.
That's not usually Shlichus yad, right? Shlichus yad usually just when you use it and you weren't supposed to use it. I mean, you weren't supposed to use it?
Shlichus yad, according to what the Ibn Ezel is saying, is actually that you used it in a way that you're not supposed, in a way that's harmful. Right, it's not just lack of approval.
Just like when you're a showman and you use it.
Right, so...
Right?
We got into the discussion last time also. Yeah.
There's an article Shulchan has a whole thing about it.
Yes, the difference between Shoshal Midas and Shlichus Yad. Right. Yeah. But you are correct. What level of stipulation is necessary in order to say that you can't do other things with it? So we have two polar cases, and then we have two intermediate cases. Right? One pole is nothing has been stipulated. I'm going to stop going from the sources inside just because I see it. We have very little time left. Until I need to read them, in which case I will. But pole number one, nothing has been stipulated at all. So then you can do anything within whatever is normal, acceptable conduct. On the other hand, an exclusion has been stipulated and you violate it, then you pay for any onus that happens. That's your shlichus yad discussion. What about the intermediate cases, though? If the owner identified a use for the item but made no formal exclusion of other uses. Okay, the owner identified a use of the item but did not formally exclude anything else. He just said, have a good time out in the Atlantic or whatever it was. But I didn't say don't use it in the Pacific. I just said, enjoy the Atlantic. So the rule then is, if the owner stated a use, you're not supposed to vary. However, you may vary if it doesn't cause any harm. That's the Aval Pish Avral Dasa Bailam language in the Rambam. It also is the case of the field where you rent the field and you say to him, plant wheat, but if he plants barley, you can plant barley. As opposed to the other intermediate case, the owner said nothing, the renter was the one who mentioned a particular application. He said, I'd like to rent this, I'd like to plant some wheat. So there he has more flexibility. Then we assume, Beis Yosef says, the owner might be more flexible, and that is brought, in fact, in the Sma, even though, lechatchila, as we always say, a renter should stick with his word. Nonetheless, because the renter was the one who initiated it, that's what makes a difference. And we're going to talk about that more in gifts, and we talk about donor intent and determining donor intent. difference between what the person asking for the tzedakah said what it should be used for and the person who gave the tzedakah said what it should be used for. One last case, though, in terms of rentals. Subletting without permission. So what happens to the original rental if you try an illegal sublet? So there's Machan Ephraim who thinks, going with that rush, the rush that we saw, which I brought you, I think, the rush gives the case in which you borrow a ring from somebody and then you want to use it for kiddushin. You're not violating the loan. The kiddushin is meant to be with the benefit that the woman receives until the end of the loan. She gets to wear the ring for the next 6 months or whatever it is. So the rush there said, in the event that the original owner knew you were going to do this, you got his permission to do it, it's okay. So the Machne Ephraim, regarding this case, says, since the rush says the kiddushin works only if he has permission to lend it out, that means that a secondary rental without permission ends the initial rental. He actually goes so far as to say it ruins the initial rental, not only the second one. But let's talk more, because you have three different shittos about this second rental, about this the sublet. The first view is the rental is effective. That's the rift which we saw, right? The rift disqualified Rabbi Meir's position. He's not called a goslin, so you can rent it out to somebody else, and it's effective. That's position number one, one extreme. Second position is the owner is able to disqualify the sublet at will, but it's not disqualified unless he actually does so. This emerges from a problem within the rush. On the one hand, you have the rush I just told you about in Kiddushin, about Kiddushin with the borrowed ring, right? Where he seems to say you have to have permission, and if you don't have permission, then the whole thing is no good. However, the rush in his Psakim above Mitzia, Gimel Halachavav, quotes you the Rif. The Rif was the one who said, we don't follow Rabbi Meir. You can do whatever you want. How am I supposed to understand this? So the Truma Sadeshin says the Rush really believes like the Rif does. And the fact that he said you should get Rishus is because you should, but it's not actually a requirement. But the Machane Ephraim says no. The Machane Ephraim says the Rush takes the position that the benefit is cancelable. And because the benefit is cancelable, Kiddushin doesn't work. You follow? Since the owner at any time could say, forget it, I didn't allow this, that's not called Hanah, such that the Kiddushin should be valid. That's the way the Machane Ephraim reads the Rush. And then the third view, the rental does not work, is the Ravan, quoted the Maram Rutenberg, which I brought you on the sheets. You can take a look at it. He says, no, the second rental is entirely meaningless. He's like that Kilis Yaakov. It's like Shir Bikinyano. I didn't give you the right to do that with this. That's in Chavches. Okay. So that's like my favorite part of the Shir, the subletting thing. I think that's great. Okay. Gift, tzedakah, and donor intent. How does this work? So here you have to go back to Ayin Chesem at base, right? When we were trying to determine how you knew Rabbi Meir's position, what was your source for Rabbi Meir saying Kol Amaver El Daz Balabai is Nikra Gazlan? What was your basis? So we brought a series of cases to try to show this is Rabbi Meir's position. So we said the Purim collections, right? Magbas Purim LePurim. It's in Source Chavtes on your sheet. The fact that we say that you have to use the Purim collection for the sake of Purim. And the Ani is not allowed to buy anything else with it. That was Rabbi Yaakov quoting Rabbi Meir, to which the Gemara said, but maybe that's different. Maybe there's a special kapeda because it's a Purim collection. So he said, you're right, Rabbi Meir is a different position. You gave the dinar to the Ani to use to buy a particular piece of clothing. He's not allowed to use it to buy something else. To which the Gemara said, maybe that's not because the owner is makbid. Maybe that's because he's makbid separately because he's worried. He told everybody he was giving to the fund to make sure this Ani gets a sweater. The Ani walk around without a sweater, people are going to think he didn't actually give. So therefore, he has a special kapeda, like with Purim, he has a special kapeda. To which the Gemara says, no, because that wasn't the language. The language was not mechshad, people are going to suspect that he didn't give. The language was meshamad rel das balabayis. That shows you that's Rabbi Meir's shita. So my basis for saying Rabbi Meir believes that if you deviate from the das balabayis, you're called a thief, is from the fact that he says that the ani has to use it to buy the clothing that was specified. Do you follow? That's the source that the Gemara uses for Rabbi Meir. However, the conclusion of the Gemara here, and the Mordechai says this from Rabbeinu Simcha, is that everybody believes in donor intent. It's just that Rabbi Meir is going to apply it more broadly than the Chachamim. Because the Chachamim do believe that the that there is such a thing as a unique kepeda. Right? They believed what Rabbi Meir believed regarding Purim. They believed what Rabbi Meir believed regarding Chashad, if there's going to be suspicion that he didn't use it the way he was supposed to, that he didn't give the money that he said he was going to give. The only thing is that Rabbi Meir is more restrictive than the Chachamim. Right? If you take a look at Lamed, the Mordechai says it in the part that I bolded. He's talking about a case in which somebody gives an ani tzedakah, and the creditor of the ani says, I want you to use that to pay me back. So the answer of the Mordechai is yes, you have to, unless the creditor, unless the donor said, I don't want you to do it. Why should we care about what the donor said? Rabbi Meir is not psak. Yeah, but even the Chachamim agree. Where there's a special kepeda, even the Chachamim are on board. That's what the Mordechai says. How do you establish, I'm sorry, but I'm down to 6 minutes. How do you establish a real kepeda? So the Chavos Yair comes back to the distinction we made before, the same distinction we made when it came to rental of an item and stipulating a particular use. He says, where the beneficiary initiates the ask, the beneficiary says, I would like some money in order to use it for such and such, then he's not a thief if he does differently. Yeah, he said what he wanted to use it for. The donor didn't say, you better use it for that. Whereas, if the person who's giving the gift, the person who's giving the tzedakah says, please use it for such and such, then there's a kepeda. Even the Chacham are going to go along with Rabbi Meir. Poskei Ashkenaz accept this principle in general, that a gift is rescinded if donor intent will not be honored. Right? We talked about this when we did the shiur in terms of giving money for a girl to be able to get married. She's a yesoma, they're collecting money for her to be able to get married. And what we said was, if it turns out in the end that she's not going to get married, then according to Reb Chaim Cohen, based on the Gemara in Ksuvos Nundalet Amud Beis, the rule indeed is, you are allowed to take back the funds or not give. Well, I have to be very careful how I word that because of the Chasim Sofer. You are entitled to not give the funds. You can see it in your sheet in Lamed Beis in the Mordechai there. As one example of it, you can see the Shulchan Aruch quoting the Rush, which I brought you as well in Lamed Dalet regarding Pidyon Shvuyim, that if you raise money to redeem a captive and then the captive converts out, so the money goes back to the donors. That's the way that it works. In general, Poskei Ashkenaz tend to take that view. We seem to be taking the intent as an almanas. Yeah, such that if the intent isn't fulfilled, the gift is reversed. Poskei Sfard are less clear. At first, they seem to say the recipient gets to keep the gift. I brought you a Rashba, that's an example of it in source Lamed Hay. Where he seems to say that what's done is done. He's talking about the case about having to give the gift right now and not wait for her to get married. And indeed, the Shulchan Aruch is the best example of this in Source Lamed Vav. Right? The Shulchan Aruch says, Ha'omer tenu masayim zel nidunyasa. Give 200 zuz for her nidunya. Chayavim lasis lamei achshav. The Shulchan Aruch says, give it now, like the Rashba. She gets to hold on to the money until she gets married. And not only that, in Mesa, if she dies, so her heirs get the money, it's hers. Whereas the Ramah says, not so fast. Yesh Cholkin, some disagree, that's the Mordechai I brought you in Lamed Beis. And he says, I think that's right. So it's a machlokas. It seems, Ashkenaz is inspired, but the Chasam Sofer says, no, it's not. Chasam Sofer is on the flip side. In Lamed Zayin, the position of the Chasam Sofer is that when it comes to tzedakah, he says, everybody believes in donor intent. Ashkenaz Sfard, everybody believes in that. He says, the case of the Rashba, where he said that the money goes to her, that's because once you give her the money, you have fulfilled your mitzvah. Your only intent is to fulfill your mitzvah. Which you did. The Ani got it. You're done. You can't then complain later, but it wasn't used the way that I wanted it to be used. It doesn't matter, right? So, separate case. Somebody is a pauper. You say you're going to give him money. You give him money. And then he wins the lottery. You don't get to go back to him and say, I want my money back. You wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. You gave tzedakah. You're done, says the Chasam Sofer. As opposed to a case in which a third party is raising the money on her behalf. She hasn't actually gotten the money yet. It went to her father, and that goes on Manios' case that we didn't discuss today, but we discussed the first time. That's a different story. The money didn't get there yet. The mitzvah wasn't fulfilled yet. Now she doesn't need it. She's not getting married. So take the money back. That's the way the Chasam Sofer explains it. And we had different applications of the Chasam Sofer's idea, such as, forget tzedakah. What if you're just giving somebody a gift? There's no redeeming value, like in the tzedakah case. So therefore, you should be able to argue that the gift does not go through. The money should, in fact, go back. Because you didn't get any kiyum of anything if he's not going to use it the way that you wanted. And I think that fits the Pidyon Shavuyim case as well. When the Mechaber, we were surprised, followed the Ashkenazim. He said that the tzedakah collected for Pidyon Shavuyim is returned if the captive converts out. Right? Why is it returned? You fulfilled Pidyon Shavuyim. But the answer is, because it's a case, if you look at this story there, where the mother collected it. It didn't actually go for the nifta. It didn't go for pidyon shavuyim. And according to the Chavos Yoyer, this explanation by the Chasam Sofer may actually fit the machlokes tanoim regarding using the money for different purposes. Rabbi Meir says the ani is not allowed to deviate in his use of the funds because he thinks that the donor wants the ani to use the money for that particular purpose. That's what he wants. It isn't enough that it's tzedakah. He wants it to be used for that purpose. But Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, the donor's happy he did his mitzvah. He doesn't care what it's used for in the end. He got his mitzvah. He took care of it. I don't know, possible. So hopefully, again, you know, I realize this is a review of a 3-hour shiur in 1 hour, but hopefully if you look back to the first side, you'll see the list of key ideas that we discussed in the shiur will act as a good chazara of the chazara shiur, as well as the table of the different cases for deviation from the owner's intent. Hopefully that will help as well. Have a wonderful Shabbos. The next chazara shiur in the series is when?
The series is
Monday.